Parrish. It's Sunday, March 5th. Welcome back to the Island College Basketball Podcast. I got Matt Norlando here with me, and we got a lot to get to, including North Carolina's win over Duke that secured an outright ACC regular season title. And we'll get to Missouri's decision to fire Kim Anderson before his third season is even done. But I want to start with, if you don't mind, Norlander, the Missouri Valley Conference Tournament. Title game was earlier today on CBS. It's America's most watched network. It's the network of stars. Final score, Wichita State 71, Illinois State 51. So the Shockers are headed to the NCAA tournament, no matter whether Jerry Palm wants them there or not. What about Illinois State, Norlander? Two questions for you. A, should Illinois State get in? B, will Illinois State get in?
I'm gonna flip that on you, GP. Will they? I don't believe that they will. I would love to be surprised, but given the teams populating the bubble, the amount of wins that those teams have acquired, and Illinois State's lack of victories against top opponents, I don't think the Redbirds are going to get in. Should they get in? As of right now, when we record this Sunday at 7:40, while I have not done out a full bracket, I am inclined to believe that if I did, I would not put Illinois State in right now. But depending on what happens over the next 3-4 days, if teams certainly take bad losses, there could potentially be a case. The problem here is that Illinois State, unfortunately, has kind of a killer combo. One, it did beat Wichita State, yes, at home, but it lost to Wichita State, and those two losses that came to the Shockers, one on the road and one neutral, were by an average of like 31 points. That is rough and will be something that gets brought up. Another thing that goes into this that hurts Illinois State is that it cannot schedule at the level that it likely would try to, because, you know, Illinois State was a known commodity in the coaching community. They were going to be a good team. They had plenty of elder statesmen, and this was not going to be – Dan Mueller was not going to have this team in a down year. And so what happens is immediately basically name almost any single team that Mueller would have liked to have scheduled to help his overall resume for this very scenario. It was a non-starter. It was never going to happen. And the third thing is Illinois State – went and played road games and lost those road games, and it has three losses to sub 100 teams. And because of that, it's just not going to be enough. Even though the record overall, 27-6, is good, the Valley being down also hurts them as well. That's where I land. What about you?
I'd love for them to be in. And if they were in, I think they could win a game. It's hard to figure out how they're going to get there, though. Only two top 100 wins. The thing that's different between them and Wichita State is, you know, Wichita State didn't have really bad losses. I think every loss that Wichita State had was to a probable NCAA tournament team, except for Wichita State's loss to Illinois State. And if you were saying Illinois State should have been in 3 days ago, then at that time, I believe this is true. Double check me. But I believe Wichita State, their losses were all early and to NCAA tournament teams, whereas –
yes.
Yeah, whereas Illinois State's got losses to TCU, San Francisco, Tulsa, and Murray State. I mean, I just watched Tulsa lose to Tulane. Don't ask why I watched that, but I did. that's the problem, is that they don't have – sometimes if you have bad losses, you got so many good wins that it doesn't matter. Or if you've got a shortage of wins – we can point to the losses and go, yeah, but man, they haven't lost anybody. Illinois State's got bad losses and they don't have enough good wins. It sucks because that team's good enough to be in the tournament, but the resume I don't think's going to be. And I know, I think the last Jerry Palm update had them as like first four out, and that's great. I guess you can like hold on to some hope if you want to, but here's the truth. I can't remember the last time a team was like in the first four out a week before Selection Sunday with its season over and actually got right there, because like people just pass you, you know, somebody gets hot, you know, it's Syracuse getting hot or Wake Forest winning two games in the ACC tournament, or, you know, like whatever, like it does, it's Vanderbilt, you know, going to the SEC championship game. Just something like that happens every year. Like if you're in the clubhouse right now, it's like almost like being a golfer. You're in the clubhouse and you're in, you know, you're two shots back, but like everybody's birdieing the back nine. Like you got no chance. Like they're not going to come back to you. And so that's ultimately what I think is going to happen in Illinois State. Like it's not going to come back to them. The bubble's going to shrink. There's going to be teams in power conferences that jump ahead of them. And, you know, ultimately there'll be a great NIT team. It's the hardest part about playing in a league like the NBC. Like the reason Illinois State doesn't have quality wins, top 100 wins, it's not their fault. It's Northern Iowa's fault. It's Missouri State's fault. It's Southern Illinois' fault. You know, like at least in the WCC, you know, St. Mary's and Gonzaga, like they get an opportunity to get BYU. You know, ultimately, I think that the difference really between St. Mary's wins and like Illinois State's wins is that St. Mary's beat BYU a couple times. You know, like what should that really be the difference? Probably not. But like BYU's a top 70 RPI team, so like that matters. You know, as it pertains to the way the selection committee looks into this stuff, and so you know, and I maybe next year, but it is sort of a tough deal being in the NBC. If it's a league where you can't get quality wins, but it's also a league with a monster like Wichita State, like that's the worst possible setup. Like at least if you're in the Horizon or the MAC or whatever, there's not this one school that's outspending and out recruiting everybody else in what is, you know, mostly going to be a one bid league. I know it can be a two bid league. I know it was last year, but like that's a tough setup for those other MVC schools. Because if you can't get two school, if you don't have enough quality in the league to get quality wins in the league, and you can't get a second team in the NCAA tournament more often than not, and Greg Marshall and Wichita State are still sitting there, like what are you fighting for? NITs every year? Like it really might be.
Right. You gotta pick them off in the tournament, which had happened as we spoke. This is only Wichita State's second league title in 29 years in the postseason. But yeah, it's a tough deal, and the Valley was more down this year than it should have been and normally is. So that's not easy as well. GP, in terms of Wichita State, I posted this question on Twitter, and I now wonder how Wichita State will be seeded. It's a top 10 KenPom team. If you win, and they should not and will not go strictly by that, but that would suggest Wichita State is, you know, on the 3 line. But if you want to be conservative, you could say Wichita State should be a 6 seed. That's a conservative. If you took the metrics and you see what Wichita State's been able to do, you see how it's just romping and turning into fine powder basically everyone since the calendar turned to January. I mean, there is a valid case if you wanted to make Wichita State a 4 seed. I don't think that'll happen. I have no idea what the committee's going to do. I put them on the 6 line, I think. I think that's about fair between resume, metrics, seeing what they can do, eye test, all that. Last year, Wichita State rated very highly as well. They got dropped into the first 4. So, and that was as an at-large team. So, I don't know. What I am intrigued for, GP, here, and let me know where you think you'd seed them, but wouldn't it be something, and I wonder if this will happen, a little twist of irony here, is if this just beast of a team gets dropped into the 8-9 game and a 1 seed's like, you got to be kidding me.
No,
we got to get out of the first weekend. I wonder if they're going to be dropped in that pod, because I kind of think it might happen.
To me, that's this is the most difficult part of dealing with a team that plays in a league that they dominate but doesn't give them an opportunity to get quality wins. Because you know as well as I do, what the selection committee cares about is like top 25 wins, top 50 wins, top 100 wins, those types of things. That's what matters. They take into account everything, but ultimately they want to see a long list of wins, quality wins. Wichita State's never going to have that, or rarely going to have that. So, and they don't have it this year. So if you seed them based on their resume, you're going to end up seeding them down low. But if you seed them low, it's not only unfair to them, it is more unfair to the teams they get matched up against. And if I were a 1 seed and I looked up and Wichita State is 10th in KenPom and my 8 seed, what?
I know.
Hold up. I gotta play a top 10 KenPom team. I'm the 1 seed? So, like, you put Kansas, Wichita State in the same pot.
Oh, dude, forget. First of all, if it's Wichita State gets Kansas or somehow Kentucky, and like if Wichita State's like the 10 and Kentucky's a 2, forget about it. Those fan bases will freak the hell out and declare conspiracy. There's no doubt about it. Because remember, Wichita State beat Kansas in the tournament, and then Kentucky was the unfair matchup for undefeated Wichita State a few years ago.
Can you imagine Kansas being the number one overall seed, which will probably happen, by the way. Kansas is number one overall seed, gets a 1. Wichita gets a 8 in the same pod, and they're in the round of 32. It's a 1-8 game, and it's Kansas minus 2.
Oh, my goodness.
Because that's what it would be. Like, the idea that you'd have to play a 1-8 game and be a 2-point favorite? Like, that's ridiculous. And so I don't know exactly where I fall on this in the sense that I haven't, like, argued with myself enough about it. But I think I could get behind the idea of select the teams based off resumes. Okay, now we got the teams. Let's seed based off of KenPom. Like, I think I could get behind some version of that. Because all KenPom is, not all KenPom is, but it's something that tells you what Vegas would consider to be the favorite. I'm oversimplifying this, I know. Ken, if you're listening, stop rolling your eyes. But what it is like, it basically, you and I know, it lines up with Las Vegas really well, really well. And it shows you, like, in terms of point spreads on games, who would be favored on a neutral court. If you just let, and I don't want to say only KenPom, perhaps it's KenPom and Seth, or, well, I don't care. You figure it out. But using some sort of formula to seed the teams based off of who's actually is considered better and the ways that Vegas considers them better, that way you don't get massive, like, seed variance from reality. Because the truth is, if you seed Wichita State based on the resume, they're going to end up being in a game that their opponent shouldn't have to play. And that is, everybody always says it's unfair to Wichita. Right. It ain't unfair to Wichita as much as it's unfair to last year, Arizona. That's who got screwed by Wichita being underseeded last year. Arizona got screwed. And, there's got to be a better way to handle that very specific issue.
Yeah. Now, this is so slippery, and
I agree. There's no perfect way.
We're years from finding a resolution on this because the committee's explicit intent is to select and field the bracket in terms of accomplishment with acknowledgement that within the committee room, they will be discussing how good they think teams are, but they by no means seed the field with any sort of predictive measurements. But we're creeping closer to that because the NCAA is going to adapt officially and formally. Sagarin, KenPom, BPI. ESPN actually has two. It has a predictive and a non-predictive, and I'm told that they'll probably introduce both of those as well. Plus, you've got non-predictive stuff like RPI and KPI. So, yeah, there's a lot that needs to be determined with that, and if a greater philosophical change has to happen, I understand people that would resist that. But this is going to be really interesting because if Wichita State is put as a 10, they got no business being a 10. They just have zero, like, and this kind of happens every year, almost every year, GP. Like, the bracket will be seated and comes out every year. You'll see a story, one or two or three Vegas odds makers on the record just killing the NCAA saying, like, look at this is a joke. You know, either it's outright first round stuff and an 11 being a 4-point favorite over a 6, or if not even just that, like a 10 that would, you know, ideally be favored over or whomever or whatever. So, yeah, it will be very interesting. But the bottom line is, no matter what, wherever you put Wichita State, it is just, it's going to be a nightmare for that pod, that region. This team is just so good. I'm not going to say I won't, no matter what, put them into the Sweet 16. They would just have to be presented with a truly legitimate opponent and really good matchup for me not to put the Shockers into the second weekend.
Well, I don't know if you saw Greg Marshall's post-game interview, but, you know, Greg knows what a good team looks like. He's had a bunch of them, dating all the way back to Winthrop. And he said, no, I've thought for a while, this is a team that can win several games in the NCAA tournament. That's the word he used, several. And so, like, I don't know if he was asked or if he just expanded on his own. He was like, so, like, what does several mean? I don't know. It's vague. It's a vague term, but it means more than one. I think we can win several games. Like, he's very confident with – perhaps Greg's very confident all the time, but he's
especially – Yeah, I think that's fair.
But he's especially – and you know what? Like, why wouldn't you be if you were Greg Marshall? Like, if I were Greg Marshall, I'd be super confident too. I ran things at Winthrop so much that I had got my name on the court. Isn't his name on the court there?
Or no. Is it?
I think no. Here's what I think. At one point, they were willing to put his name on the court.
Okay.
It's either on it or that was like in the like cards. Like, please don't leave us. We'll put your name on the court. It was something like that.
Well,
right?
Shout out to Pat Kelsey because he just got Winthrop to the tournament as well on Sunday.
Shout out to Pat Kelsey. Shout out to Pat.
Where's Winthrop located,
don't
GP?
Don't tell me it's not too far from Chester, South Carolina. I know that. I know that for sure.
Yeah.
Shout out to Devin Townie. In fact, somebody tweeted me one time and said, how did Greg Marshall let Devin Downey get away from Winthrop? And I didn't have a good answer for that. I don't know.
I'm
about to sit down with Greg someday and say, okay, listen, Fred VanVleet, that was nice. Ron Baker, congratulations. You let Devin Downey slip right through your freaking hands. You were at Winthrop. He was at Chester High. Did you not get down to Chester High enough? What do you think the answer is to that?
Clearly the answer is yes. Like, yes, I did not get down there.
Shouts to Devin Downey. Shouts to Terry Teagle. Back to Illinois State for a second because I did want to make this point. I want them in the tournament. I just don't think there's any way that the committee, forget me, that the committee is going to be able to rationalize it. Because even last year when we were having similar conversations about Wichita State, right? Like, they should be in and we want them in and all that stuff. They had a KenPom number that suggested this is really one of the best 20 teams in the country. Like, if you leave them out, you're insane. Illinois State's 49th at KenPom. The committee's right. Going to have no problem leaving out the 49th team at KenPom. I think – I can't remember what the number is, but I went back, like, for the past several years, and basically if you were a top something KenPom team – I don't know the number off the top of my head, but it was like if you're a top 36, top 41, whatever it was, like something in that range, you had not missed – none of those teams had missed the NCAA tournament in the past like 3 or 4 years, unless they were ineligible for the NCAA tournament. My point is this. It was certainly higher than 49. You know, they've left out 49 before. I don't think the committee's going to have any problem leaving out 49 again. That's too bad. But as they say, it is what it is. Let me tell you about SeatGeek. Buying tickets online for sports and concerts has been a confusing process for a long time, but not anymore. Not if you use the promo code COLLEGEBB at SeatGeek.com or when you download the SeatGeek app. That's COLLEGEBB. Here's what you're doing. You're going to SeatGeek, search for your tickets, whatever you want. Basketball tickets, baseball tickets, concert tickets, doesn't matter. When you find what you want, buy them and use the promo code COLLEGEBB. And SeatGeek's going to send you $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase. Now, what's so great about SeatGeek that makes it different from these other horrible ticket purchasing sites, the ones that you should never get on because you might catch viruses, is that SeatGeek's going to handle price comparison for you. They're going to search multiple ticket outlets. So you don't have to search a million different places to make sure you're getting the best tickets or the best deal. They'll do that for you. They do the work, you save money. They do the work, you save time. So go to SeatGeek.com or download the app in the App Store, SeatGeek. Use promo code COLLEGEBB. They're going to send you $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase. That's SeatGeek, millions of tickets in one place. From the everybody saw this one coming department, Missouri has divorced itself from Kim Anderson, or at least announced that they will be divorcing after Missouri loses in the SEC tournament, which means they will be divorcing as soon as Missouri's first game in the SEC tournament is complete. Am I wrong?
No, you're not wrong.
You want to gamble on that? We'll gamble on it if you want to.
No, it's blunt and accurate.
8-46 in the SEC in 3 years, and I'm not here to pile on. I don't really know Kim, but by all accounts, he's a nice enough guy. So like whatever. I just never understood this hire. Never made sense to me. This isn't one of those revisionist history. Like I knew Kim Anderson was never gonna work, and like you actually thought he was might. Like I never, you know, when I'm wrong, I'll say I'm wrong. I never got this. Like Ben Hallen wanted that job. They barely took his call. Like, I don't even know if they took his call. Like, I know he had people, like, reaching out to Missouri. Like, hey, I got 3 Final Fours, and I'm looking for a job if you're interested. And they were like, no, we got our guy. Kim Anderson? Like, somebody who hadn't been in Division I basketball in 15 years? And so it went, I was going to say about the way I thought. I honestly didn't think it would go this poorly, if only because it's hard to imagine things going this poorly. But 8-46 in 3 years, and so now they will be starting a coaching search. They've already been reaching out to different candidates, different agents, trying to gauge what type of job they've got. The name that I have heard most closely associated with it is Konzo Martin.
Explain this for people that don't quite get why he would be a candidate.
Well, he's from East St. Louis. East St. Louis is a lot like West Memphis, Arkansas. It's in Illinois, but it's like it's across the river from St. Louis, Missouri. He basically grew up in a, I don't want to say a suburb because suburb implies like something other than East St. Louis. East St. Louis is rough. If you ever been to St. Louis and you ended up in a strip club, probably at East St. Louis. So, I mean, anybody from East St. Louis knows what I'm talking about, right? And so, you know, like he grew up in it's rough, but like on the border, like if you like, there's Memphis and then there's West Memphis, Arkansas, Memphis, Tennessee, West Memphis, Arkansas, right across the river. There's St. Louis, Missouri, and then East St. Louis, Illinois, right across the river. And so he's got connections to the area. You know, the question becomes like, does he want to leave California? Like, for the most part, people I know who moved to California don't ever want to leave California.
But he's in a good area.
He's in a great area, but there is a massive, like, you know, you can wear out your welcome almost anywhere. Like, stay a little too long. Konzo's like, I think he's pretty smart about like understanding, like, don't ever stay too long anyway.
Yeah, he's been at Cal 2 years.
But like, okay, let's say they missed it this year. And then they miss it again
next
year.
Which I think they will. And by the way, I think that they should. California right now, I would not have in the field. I think it needs to get stuff done in the Pac-12 tournament. But are you saying – so he's been in there 3 years, though,
yeah,
by the way.
Yeah, that's
he
what
was at Missouri State – well, the pattern could hold here.
Yeah.
He was at Missouri State 3 years, did Tennessee 3 years, done Cal 3 years.
Right.
I think the Mizzou job's got to be next
year. Well, like,
year.
Okay, let's say you stay at Cal. Okay, you miss it this year, you stay at Cal. Next year, you miss it again. Probably don't get fired, but you go into year five and, like, they're talking about – this is the year. You better prove it or else you're going. Okay. Like, so you got 2 years guaranteed left. That's it. Missouri comes in with a 6-year contract. What do you do? 6-year contract for comparable money, better cost of living, closer to where you grew up. What do you do? I probably take it.
I think that's a really tough call. Because of living situation, contract would obviously depend how much you want to go home or feel the need to go home, relatively speaking, with Columbia and its distance to East St. Louis. The league, recruiting, what he can bring in, what he thinks he's going to have a good grip on in terms of prospects that he will bring in for sure next season, then maybe the year after. I'm not convinced he will take this job or that it would necessarily even be the first choice for Mizzou. Would be interesting. I mean, listen, Missouri is going to want a sitting head coach. There's no doubt about that. If Cal doesn't get in this year, and let's just go, listen, they could get in. Don't get me wrong, but I think Palm has them in. I would not have them in right now. But if they don't get in, Martin will have been a coach for 9 years and made two NCAA tournaments in that time. Lost in the first round, was upset last year by Hawaii, if I remember correctly. And then squeaked in with Tennessee his final year there before the fan base pushed him out. So if you're a Missouri fan, is the Konzo Martin hire satiating your appetite? I mean, is that the best type of candidate that you could get? Because it will be interesting to see. Because I happen to think that if you got the right guy and you actually got it rolling at Mizzou, which is harder said than done, without a doubt. It's like one of the best programs to never make a Final Four. But if you got it going, like, I could see you really just establishing yourself as a top three team program in that league. And that would be a very nice place to live in terms of, like, the league itself. If you got Mizzou as top three in the SEC, you're going to the tournament. You'd be able to recruit well. It's in a decent spot. So there's a lot to consider there. I'm a little up in the air in terms of who will take the job. And what names will establish themselves as true front runners over the next 2 weeks?
Yeah, I'm not trying to promise you that Konzo would do it. I'm just trying to explain to you why, if I were Konzo, I might do it. And it would have very little to do with going back home. The truth is, this isn't true without exception. But like, once you've been gone from quote home for 20 years, like home doesn't even feel like home anymore. Like you just get you like
sure.
Home is wherever your children are growing up. You know, like I remember having this conversation with Jamie Dixon. One time, and you know, ultimately he left Pitt, but that wasn't because he was like anxious to get out of Pitt. It was like, you know, they lowered his buyout so he would go. Like, it was just like they didn't appreciate him anymore. It was just like, it was just time to go. But, you know, Jamie's from Southern California, and you know, it was USC job open. There was a bunch of West Coast jobs that had opened, and people always assumed, well, he's going to go back home. And he was like, home is like, I've been in Pitt for like Pittsburgh for like 15 years, or it wasn't quite that long, but like 10 years. Like, my kids were born in Pittsburgh. They're being raised in Pittsburgh. Yeah. Like, home is Pittsburgh. That's where home is.
I feel that whole – GP, I feel like the whole notion of doing that is so much more based in football. And maybe I'm wrong, and the fans of this podcast who listen who are, like, really into football as well. Not that it doesn't exist in basketball as well, but I just feel like that whole notion, it's just so much more – like, you're so much more prevalent. I don't know. Maybe that's because, you know, football's huge in the South, and if you grew up in the South, it means more there. That might be a part of it as well. I don't know.
Yeah.
But you're definitely onto something with this.
Right. But with – so I don't know what he would do. I'm just saying, if you miss the tournament this year and you're that's year three, then year four, let's say you also miss it, and you head into year five with job pressure on you, it would mean that you've only got – if you told me that Konzo, if he misses it this year and next year and the year after, he would be fired at Cal if he missed it, which is a very reasonable – that's usually the way these Power 5 jobs go. Like, if you miss it three straight years at a school like Cal, we got to make a change. So if you told me that's the reality, if that happens, what you're telling me, he's got 2 years guaranteed left to coach at Cal. If Missouri comes in with a six-year contract, guaranteed money, and you're going to get 4 years no matter what, then that, to me at least, makes sense in terms of job security, makes sense in terms of money. It doesn't mean that I would definitely do it, but that's – or that I think Konzo would definitely do it, but that's at least one way of thinking. Another name that has been associated with that job, Lorenzo Romar. And I think for obvious reasons, he used to coach at St. Louis. That's not really the obvious reason. The obvious reason is Michael Porter Sr. is on the staff. Michael Porter Sr. was an assistant coach at Missouri, women's assistant coach, before he got a job on Lorenzo's staff at Washington. He's the father, of course, of Michael Porter Jr. The idea would be hire Lorenzo Romar. He brings Michael Porter Sr. He brings Michael Porter Jr. You're at Missouri. Next year, you got the number one player in the country. If you're Mizzou, do you explore that?
I had heard this floated out 2 weeks ago, and at least like the boosters that are surrounding that program have definitely thought that this should be something that should be explored. Be careful with that. I mean, what are you chasing there? Look at Romar. Look what he hasn't been able to do at Washington, and ask yourself if it's worth it to take a chance. And Romar has had some success over the years. Don't get me wrong.
That's the thing that about Romar that's interesting. Like, he right now, it's just he is, and I mean this with all due respect, but in the way that, you know, Johnny Jones had Ben Simmons and did nothing with it. Lorenzo's had Marquise Chris, Jonathan. There's been a lot, right, right, and done nothing with it. Except, like, it's weird because he's got big accomplishments in his background. It's not like he's never won, you know? I don't understand why is he – how did this turn to the point where – because most of the time, guys who once won, when they stop winning, it's because they stopped getting players. He still got the players, just not winning with them. I don't really understand it. It's a pretty unique deal.
Yeah, it is unique. And listen, I feel I've been critical here and there and doing the freshman rankings with him. And not that I need to be killing Lorenzo Romar, but last year Johnny Jones was just – impaled on a weekly basis with LSU and Ben Simmons. And I've mentioned this on the podcast. Like, I remember years ago, like when I just started like getting on Twitter and I was still using College Hoops Journal, getting the CBS. Like, I remember like the Washington fan base being irregularly like fed up with Romar. And I'm talking GP. I'm talking like 2013, 2012, even like they made the tournament in 2011. The fans might've thought the team should have been better. So I know that they're ready for a divorce from that. All I'm saying is, do you pursue it? Maybe you have conversations and you see if it's possible. But I think many people listening would agree that if they did go that route and they got Michael Porter, and you know what? It was amazing for a year. There could be easily a scenario where he's there 5 years. They only go to the tournament once. And then what did you really accomplish? If you're Missouri, you want to get a coach that doesn't see it as a stepping stone job or doesn't see it as a golden parachute. You want a coach that's really just entering the prime of his career between the ages of 35 and 45 that can be there for like a decade plus and get the program back to what the fan base believes it should be. I happen to think it might be a top two, top three fascinating job opening. And I just don't know who's going to take it or where it's going to go. I'm very intrigued.
If I were Missouri and I was interested in getting Michael Porter Jr., I would go hire the coach I wanted to hire, whoever that is, Konzo Martin, if you can get him, Dan Muller. Like, you know, we talked about Illinois State earlier. Like, Dan would be, you know, Dan's was
an absolutely
longtime assistant in the SEC at Vanderbilt. He knows the league. Dan makes a lot of sense to me.
I totally agree with that.
At Missouri. So, like, here's what I would do. I'd go hire Dan. Because you don't have to pay $3 million to get Dan Muller, you know? Like, I'm not trying to I'm not trying to lower Dan's potential salary, but you don't have to invest – you probably don't have to pay $1.5 to get Dan Muller. So here's what I do. I pay, you know, whatever. I just you offer the job to Dan Muller, you're probably going to get Dan Muller. And then I give him $300,000 to go hire Michael Porter Sr. That's the way I do that deal. I tell Michael Porter Sr., come back to Columbia – we're going to overpay you. Like, why isn't that the route to go? Rather than hire Lorenzo and Michael Porter Sr.
Yeah, I know. Well, I mean, it just might be harder to pull off those maneuvers. And is it doable in theory? Maybe. I just, you know, that could also blow up in your face, but we'll see.
If it blows up in your face, what's the absolute worst thing that happened? You missed out on a player for 4 months.
Yeah, I know.
Anyway, the Missouri job, that NC State's we'll open now. Missouri is open now.
We got
now.
More to come. I mean, we're going to be talking about this. I mean, it's coming, you know.
Yeah, I mean, by the time we get back here on Wednesday, there'll be more jobs opening. And then by the end of this week, it'll be all over the place because once these Power 5 conference tournaments get going, and yes, I'm going to keep saying Power 5 over and over again. Every time you tweet me and tell me not to use the word Power 5, I actually type it into my notes. To remind me to say it over.
And Big East
and
fans, I got you. Traditional Big Six conferences, I got you. Parrish can be the bad cop, whatever.
So the Power Five conference tournaments are going to get going. You know, the ones that really matter, the great ones. And so and when those bad teams with coaches on the hot seat end up, you know, their season's over. Well, then it's going to pop. And so that'll be going on all week, probably multiple. Times a day. One of the tournaments is going to get going on, ACC tournament. North Carolina is the number one seed. They beat Duke on Saturday night. I think the point spread was 7. They won it by 7. It was really like a one possession game most of the game. And then Carolina pulled away a little bit at the end. Joe Barry was terrific. Michael Jordan was there and said the ceiling is the roof for the North Carolina football program.
The ceiling is the roof. I'm actually, you know what? I'm bummed we got this deep into the podcast and had not.
How did I not open
to drop that?
I had totally forgotten about ceiling is the roof until just now. Dude, how good was that? And is Michael Jordan the greatest gift for the internet ever? Like, he gives us crying Jordan, and then he gives us the ceiling is the roof.
Sounds like it's something Charlie Day would say on It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. It's just amazing. And Jordan is the gift that just keeps on giving. And by the way, I grew up an absolutely massive, I mean, probably to the point of disturbing level of Chicago Bulls, Michael Jordan fandom. So it has been interesting to see how his general existence in greater pop culture and internet meme culture has just continued to thrive. And so, yes, GP, the ceiling. The ceiling is the roof.
He was out there trying to compliment the football program at North Carolina as strongly as he could. And the words that came out of his mouth were, the ceiling is the roof. I'll be honest with you. I was sitting here watching the game, and I had already poured a drink. And I was wondering, I was like, have I drank too much? Because I think Michael Jordan just said, the ceiling is the roof.
I rewound it.
I actually had to rewind it. I was like, hold on. I need to make sure Michael Jordan just said the ceiling is the roof. Because if Michael Jordan just said the ceiling is the roof, that is the funniest thing in the world to me. And then, of course, crying Jordan ends up on top of the Dean Dome, on the Dean Dome roof.
I know. Just perfect. So good. Like, oh, my gosh.
Too much. So North Carolina won, and they'll be the one seed in the ACC tournament. And that's because they are the ACC regular season champions. And I'm going to keep saying that over and over again, just as much as I say Power 5, because it annoys idiots. Why are there these ACC fans who just reject the idea that there's a such thing as an ACC regular season championship?
Because I don't think that the ACC regular season champion is acknowledged in official record books because of unbalanced schedules. And so because of that, they only consider a crapshoot league tournament to determine an official champion, which is no better, by the way.
If you're going
to look into like actuality and what's the most deserving, an unbalanced schedule is still a better way to determine a champion over a 14, 16, 18, or as the ACC will be going to, a 20-game sample size than having to win three games in a row.
According to Andrew Carter, who's a North Carolina beat writer, the ACC absolutely does recognize regular season championships. Shout out to
Andrew Carter. I had been long told that it did not.
Andrew Carter's the beat writer. I'm going to trust him, right? He's not only a beat writer, he's a smart guy. Even though he took issue with me on NC State, I still respect him as a smart man. And so I'll defer to him. He says the ACC does acknowledge regular season championships, so they do. Beyond that, go look at Mike Krzyzewski's resume or Roy Williams or any ACC coach. There ain't many who will get to win those championships. Jim Larranaga, go to his Wikipedia page right now. You know what it says? Go look at his bio on the Miami official website. Go look at Coach K's bio on the Duke official website. Roy's bio on the North Carolina official website. They all mention ACC regular season championship. They hang banners for these things. And yet, if you ever use the phrase ACC regular season championship, you got seven nerds immediately ready to tell you, well, you know, what you don't understand is that the ACC... Dude, I am double birding you right now into my computer, nerd, to shut up with your ACC regular season championship's not really a thing. It's only ACC term. Dude, then tell me why they hang them banners for them. Tell me why they're on Coach K's official bio and Roy's official bio, nerd. And by the way, that it's an unbalanced schedule, I get it. Almost everything in sports is an unbalanced schedule. You know, we have an SEC West champion in football and an SEC East champion in football. Those are unbalanced schedules. We don't pretend you can't possibly be an SEC West champion because of an unbalanced schedule. Like, what are these people even talking about? Drive me crazy.
What are we even talking about here?
What are these people even talking about? Like, if you wake up on a Sunday morning in March anxious to tell somebody there's no such thing as an ACC regular season title, what is wrong with you? Like, if that's how you get off on a Sunday morning in March, like, this dude woke up on Sunday morning, can't wait to tell me how, well, you know, Parrish, the ACC really doesn't have a regular season title. You know what? S my D.
Okay, there we go. anything else from the weekend that you want to hit on here?
No, that was it. I just wanted to come on this podcast, get it started, shout out Devin Downey, say Power 5 a bunch of times, call those idiots that pretend ACC regular season titles don't mean anything, idiots, and then just be done with it.
Let me just lob this real quick at you because I did write about it on Saturday. It was crazy that the Big East had every single game go its way that it needed to, and now the conference is positioning itself to have seven teams in the field, and that is only possible because Seton Hall got a huge, huge win on the road. In my opinion, it just is enough to give them as a lock by beating Butler. Providence, Dodge, Catastrophe, one at St. John, Xavier, Dodge, Catastrophe, one at DePaul, and we'll get into more conference stuff because this stuff isn't even going to get going until really Wednesday, although Xavier has to dodge Catastrophe. It has to beat DePaul twice. If Xavier loses to DePaul in that first game of the Big East tournament, there would be an interesting argument against the Musketeers, but I don't think they'll lose, so it shouldn't matter.
Go look at what they've done without Edmund Sumner.
I know. So they got to beat DePaul two times in a row. But that was just an interesting thing for me over the weekend. The Big East had the best weekend, in my opinion, of any conference. But if people are listening for like more bubble stuff, listen, like Wednesday's podcast, we're going to be looking ahead to all those big conference tournaments. And we'll get into Syracuse and Wake Forest and Vanderbilt and Rhode Island and you name it. There's plenty of time to discuss all that stuff. But yeah, I just couldn't believe what happened with the Big East there. And overall, it wasn't like a loud, loud weekend. But shout out to the four auto bids, you know, the teams that got in. Jacksonville State, which is, by the way, in Alabama. It's not in Florida. so we got four teams in. Who else is in? Dunk City's in. Wichita State is in. And Winthrop is in. So those are the four that are in.
And what that means is Monmouth is out.
Oh, I know.
Belmont is out.
I know.
And
all these one seats.
And it's fun. And by the way, I was just kidding when I said I just wanted to do those things and get out of here. I do actually have a couple more things I want to talk about. Monmouth being out, Belmont's being out has brought back to the forefront the conversation.
Oakland's out of the horizon.
Oakland's out of the horizon. That's my homie Isaiah Brock.
Yep.
Army
shout
veteran.
Out to Greg Campy.
Shout out to Greg Campy for sure.
Shout out to Keith Benson.
Shout out to Keith Benson. Who was the little guard there for last year that we need to shout out?
Oh my gosh. Oh, this is how do I?
He was like the Devin Downey of Oakland.
He absolutely. Oh my god, we're talking. I know it. He went pro too. He's going
to
be a
plays with the Cavs. Yeah, shout out to Kay Felder. Shout out to Kay Felder. So it's like brought back to the comment. You know, like, hey, what are we doing with these postseason tournaments? You know, like you don't get your best teams in. This is the wrong way to do it. Where do you fall on that debate?
We've talked about this. I all right. If I was the commissioner of a league, personally, I would lean toward giving the auto bid to the regular season champion. Now, we've had this discussion actually, I think, two or three times every year, because there are real world issues with this in terms of like contracts with TV networks, making money, all that stuff. You kind of just in a certain way sell your soul to have that huge moment this week, championship week. I get that. But you also can hinder yourself, because if you put your best representative in the tournament, you can also make a lot of money in what are known as tournament units. So if, for example, like Monmouth is legitimately freaking good and loses in a road game, a road environment at Siena, because that's where the Max holding its damn tournament in the middle of Albany. And so Monmouth, which would have had a good shot at getting one, if not two, it could have done it. I'm telling you, it was that good. It's won like 60 regular season games the past 2 years, won't get into the tournament. You lose out on the opportunity to get upset wins in that regard as well. So I get both sides of it. I wish for the betterment of college basketball, there were just three or four leagues that said, you know what, we're going to give the auto bid to our regular season champ. If there's a tie at the end of the season, we're going to play it out as is, and you can get the bid that way. And if the regular season champ goes on to win the tournament title, then the runner-up in that game gets to go to the NIT. Because, by the way, for 275 schools, 250 schools, going to the NIT is still a really good thing. It's still a goal that's not easy to reach, and the chance to play in Madison Square Garden at the end of the season, if you break through to that Final Four in that tournament, is still a big thing. So that's generally where I come from. It. I know you lean toward more like you got to have the tournaments, you got to do it this way. There's a reason for this.
Oh, I don't think you have to have the tournaments, but without the tournaments, you lose all this stuff that people call March Madness.
I know.
Yeah, like I know. Like Gottlieb and I, shout out to Doug Gottlieb, got into I don't want to say an argument, but like we were just going back and forth on it a little bit one time, because his idea, and I apologize if I'm not getting it exactly right, but I this is the way I remember it. He said you can't have the best, you know, a team that is awesome, you know, from January through March, dominates its league, and then it has one bad night and doesn't get to go to the NCAA tournament. And I understand, like, if you say that sucks, like, I'll nod along. Yeah, that does suck. But so he said, here's the fix. You give the NCAA automatic bid, the regular season champ. And by the way, how are you going to figure that out with all your unbalanced schedules, nerds? But you give it to your regular season champs, and then you play the tournament. And the winner of the tournament gets to go to the NIT. And I said, Doug, who cares about the NIT? He was like, then you could still sell it as, you know, this is for something. I'm like, it's for something nobody cares about. Like, you can't have championship week and say, on Monday night, it's the Southern Conference. It's East Tennessee State against Chattanooga for a trip to the NIT. Like, who cares? Like, we went, like, who cares? But it's East Tennessee State against Chattanooga for a berth to the big dance? Okay, let's go. Championship week. I understand how it's terrible. I feel terrible, like, for the kids at Belmont to have a year like that, Monmouth have a year like that, and then just one bad night and have it blow up on them. Murray State went through this a few years ago with Cameron Payne. Like you play like Murray State, you got a player like you got a lottery pick, like it never happens. You'll never like maybe never happen again. And then you have one bad night, and it really wasn't a bad night. Like it was an awesome game, if I remember correctly. Like it was them and Belmont. It was awesome.
It was a freaking awesome game.
Yeah, and they just lost it because you know what? Because Belmont's good, and like sometimes people lose, and so and then it's over. Like I get that that's terrible, but the alternative to not having those high stakes conference tournaments is you lose all the stuff that you say is great. Like, you know, at some point this week, somebody from a three-seeded, one-bid league is going to hit somebody from a three-seed in a one-bid league is going to hit a buzzer beater to win an auto bid or go for 32 points to win an auto bid. And everybody, they're going to jump around, and we're going to talk about how great it is, and Rothstein's going to tweet, "This is March," 50 times. and like you lose all that. So I get that it sucks when Monmouth loses and Belmont loses, but understand if you get away from the way we do it now, you lose all the good stuff that you say you love too.
Yeah. This is very hard to navigate with television schedules. It might be actually like borderline impossible, but if you still want to have the urgency of this and not reward the auto bid to a regular season champion, and by the way, this could screw over the Ivy in its very first year. Princeton is so clearly the best team in the conference, and Penn is the 4 seed and has played at the Palastro, which is Penn's home venue. That's upcoming Saturday and Sunday, so we're going to get more of this. But if you wanted to dodge it, maybe you say the number 1 seed's got to be beaten twice in a title game situation, and there's a little more leeway there. But then again, it's like, okay, if you have the contingency game, like when do you play it? Who would air it? So that might be a way to still keep the urgency of the bracket and give the 1 seed basically every possible chance that's realistic within a bracket. But obviously this is just a problem that college basketball has birthed unto itself. I just hate the idea that, and even like Valpo, which got the 2, lost Alec Peters, and now Valpo's done.
Right.
Like it's just, sometimes these small programs, which I feel like we should cape up for a little bit, and we should stump for the Wichita States and Illinois States and just the school, the Monmouths, because there's a lot going against them. And for Monmouth to have to play at Siena's home building in its league tournament, and Siena's a solid team, and you know what? Jimmy Patsos in the NCAA tournament would be amazing for anyone that has to cover his games. But just Monmouth got screwed, man. That's really ultimately one of the better mid-major teams of the past half decade that will never get to the tournament.
Yeah, and again, there's no perfect solution to this because you're talking about – I mean, the whole reason the Ivy League went to a tournament is to get the championship game on television. Like, that's the motivation.
Yeah, that,
and so,
correct.
Like, television plays a massive role in this. So nothing is simple. It's all way more complicated than we're making it out to be or anybody else is making it out to be. And I haven't put – I'm just sort of spitballing here. But another way, why not – and I'm sure I could poke holes in this as well. But like, why not, if you're in a traditional one-bid league and you're trying to have a balance between, God, we would really like to give our best team the best opportunity to win the auto bid and get to the NCAA tournament, but we still need to have a tournament because it's a moneymaker, because it gets us on television. Could you do this? Is this too far? Your number 1 seed is already penciled into the championship game, and everybody else is playing for the opportunity to play them.
I don't think that's too far.
Because that means all you got to do is win one game.
There might be one or two leagues that do that. A few of them put them in the semis.
Yeah, I don't think anybody goes all the way championship game.
No one. You're probably right. There's probably no one that goes right to the title game.
But why not that? Like sitting around.
That's also something. And then, but then there's like, holy crap! It's really just like.
But
one
But you know what happens? Here's what happens. Another team has to play 3. They get hot. You've been off for a week. And then the coach says, we've been sitting around for a week with nothing to do. And that team played yesterday and the day before, and they got into a rhythm. Yeah. And now we like that. Like, coaches would bitch about that as well.
Oh, listen, coaches will bitch about just almost anything. Right. There's no doubt about that. It's unquestionable.
So there's no perfect solution, but I do, you know, for everybody who watches Monmouth lose and Belmont lose and Oakland lose and say, this is terrible, just understand the obvious solution is to just not have these. But if you don't have these, you don't have all this. You don't have all the other stories that are going to develop over the next week. I promise you, for every disappointing Belmont loss, Monmouth loss, Oakland loss, there's going to be an amazing story that emerges based off of the auto bid in a single elimination league tournament. And before we get out of here, I don't know if this is anything to really talk about as much as it's just something I noticed and actually went and looked it up and found it interesting. you know, every once in a while you run into folks who say, you know what, like, you know, when we're doing preseason top 25 and one or preseason anything, they say, hey, you don't know how to see. You don't know. Preseason polls are worthless. Preseason this is worthless. If you look at the top 10 leagues in the country right now, according to KenPom, which are, by the way, in order, Big 12, ACC, Big East, Big 10, SEC, Pac-12, American, Atlantic 10, Mountain West, Missouri Valley. Basically, there are no surprises in those leagues at all in terms of the league champions. Like, we had it all pegged. It was pegged. Yeah. Like, it's the way it was supposed to be. I'll walk you through it. Big 12, Kansas was obviously picked first. Kansas won it outright. ACC, Duke was picked first. North Carolina won it, but North Carolina was picked second. Like, so it's like nothing that surprising. The team that, a top 10 team that was picked second actually won the ACC outright. Big East, Villanova picked first. Villanova wins it. Big 10, and this is the wildest one, Purdue was picked fourth. Actually, the Big 10 doesn't actually do a formal preseason poll. But, like, if you go just by the AP poll, they were the fourth highest Big Ten team in the preseason AP poll. Ahead of
Wisconsin or Indiana was projected.
Wisconsin, yeah, Indiana, Michigan State, Purdue. That's the order it was supposed to be. According to the AP poll, Purdue is fourth. But, like, still Purdue was 15th in the preseason AP poll. So if the craziest thing that happened in a top 10 league is that a top 15 team won the Big Ten, like it was, this was all pretty predictable. SEC, Kentucky picked first. Kentucky wins it outright. Pac-12, Oregon and Arizona were picked first and second. They finished tied for first. AAC, SMU was picked second. They won it outright. Atlantic 10, Dayton picked first. They won it outright. Mountain West Conference, Nevada was picked second, but wins it outright. Missouri Valley, Illinois State, and Wichita State shared the league title. They were picked first and second. In other words, top 10 leagues in America, and they all, at least at the very top, went basically the way they were supposed to go. That's interesting, huh? Or maybe it's not, yeah. But I don't know.
It is. And only a few sideways teams. I mean, San Diego State is a shocker versus preseason expectations. Indiana turned into be relatively surprising given preseason expectations. But generally, no, it is funny how that works out. And we've definitely talked about that before. And I remember talking back in October, GP, us going through, and we agreed on almost every league and had kind of discussed, like, there's really no reason why you would go against Villanova in the Big East and you would go against Duke in the ACC, except for maybe North Carolina, and you would go against Kentucky, you know, and we knew UCLA was going to be really good and we expected Oregon to be this good. And at the time, Arizona, we were still waiting on Trier, but no, it is. Thanks for pointing that out. It is pretty intriguing.
Remember, you can subscribe to the Ion College Basketball Podcast on iTunes. That's the best way to get the latest episodes as quickly as possible. So please do that. Thank you for listening. We will be back here on Wednesday, and we'll be right in the middle of the conference tournaments then, right? When do they get started? Like Tuesday, Wednesday?
Yeah, Tuesday, Wednesday, and then they're really in bloom for all the big ones on Thursday.
Dig it, dig it, dig it. So we'll talk to you on Wednesday. Till then, take care.